Dear listeners, Sai Ram, we now bring you part 1 of our program Vahini Satsang. Today's episode was first aired on the 2nd day of February 2017 as part of Thursday Live programs on Asia Stream of Radio Sai. This program is hosted by Team Radio Sai's Bishu.
Spend the day with Sai.
From 6 a.m. to 9:30 p.m. on Radio Sai Thursday Live.
Radio Sai Thursday Live.
Stay tuned.
Saram, dear listeners, and welcome to Vahini Satsang. This is the 8th episode in this series. By Bhagwan's grace, we started this more than 2 months ago with this prayer and inspiration that He guides us to understand and ruminate on all those beautiful directions for life, directions for leading a spiritual life that the Lord Himself has penned. And we started with Prema Vahini because this is the first series that Bhagwan wrote when He started Sanatana Sarathi, the magazine through which He wanted to communicate His message directly to all the devotees. And today, by Bhagwan's grace, we also have a guest, a senior alumnus of Bhagwan's University, Brother Abhimanyu Kaul. So he will be joining us as we go on to discuss the third chapter of Prema Vahini. We began the discussion on the third chapter the last week, but today we'll spend a little more time on the first two paragraphs which we began last week, and then we'll move on. So let's listen to the first two paragraphs of the third chapter of Prema Vahini.
Sadhane jeevitamunaku margamu manavudu enta uttama sthitiki pogalado ee naradehamunandu enta shakti imidi unnado చూపగల తెలుపగల మహాత్ములు నాడును నేడును కలరు. మనసు ఎల్లప్పుడూ బయటనే తిరుగుచుండుట, ఇతరులను విమర్శించుట, ఇట్టి వ్యాపారములయందే అది చాలా వ్యర్థమైపోతున్నది. ఇతరుల గుణదోషములను చూచుటలోనే నిమగ్నుడైన ఇంక ఏకాగ్రత ఎట్లు కుదురును?
ప్రేమవాహిని చాప్టర్ 3. దేర్ హ్యావ్ బీన్ అండ్ దేర్ ఆర్ గ్రేట్ మాస్టర్స్ నౌ టూ who demonstrate to man the great heights one can attain and also reveal the great power that is latent in the human body. Mind of man is often wasted wandering on things outside, criticizing others and similar such businesses. When one is always engaged in seeing faults in others, how can one attain ekagrata or one-pointedness?
నా వంటి దేహం కలవారే వీరపురుషులు, నా వంటి దేహము కలవారే మహాపురుషులు. వారే ఇట్టి స్థితికి రాగలిగినప్పుడు నా స్థితి ఇట్లు ఎందుకుండవలను? ఇతరుల లోపములను వెదకినచో నాకేమి లాభము? నా లోపములు నేనే వెదకి నాకు నేను మనసు స్వాధీనంలో పెట్టుకొనవలను అనే సంకల్పము స్థిరము చేసుకునుట మొదటి సాధన.
When many valorous and great ones who have physical bodies just like me have attained such exalted status, why should my position be anything less? What do I gain in finding faults of others? I have to search within myself for my own faults and keep my mind under control. Making this firm resolve is the first step in spiritual practice.
So, Brother Abhimanyu Kaul, really warm welcome to you to Prema Vahini Satsang. And as you hear these first two chapters, please share with us your thoughts. And first of all, how does it feel to be part of Vahini Satsang? First time you are here with us on this series.
I am grateful to Bhagwan as well as to both of you for inviting me to this beautiful offering. I really feel blessed to be part of this group. In fact, it's very strange that I'm meeting people around the world who are exploring the same mm-hmm. from their own perspective. Like I met recently another brother of ours in Canada, and we all were discussing about how Bhagwan has given so much in this life that one lifetime is not at all sufficient to explore. And he himself has ventured into learning Telugu, learning the script Telugu.
What is his mother tongue?
His mother tongue is Tamil.
So he's learning Telugu?
Yeah, he's learning Telugu and learning to write Telugu so that he can listen to Bhagwan's discourses and write it and then transcribe it so that he can transliterate for the generations to come. And here I come and I see you are already started a whole journey on exactly what Baba has said. And the funny part is when Swami has said something, you know, obviously with all good intentions, we try to interpret and try to understand it. But you all are doing an amazing work by putting it exactly what Swami said, so that it gives a mankind, a generation to have the original version of Bhagwan and the liberty of people to explore it in their own manner. So I feel blessed to be part of it. Thank you for really giving me this opportunity to come and share this moment with you.
In fact, it's really so heartening that, you know, there are people who are doing this now. After the master's physical form is no more visible, now you have this coming generation who are so keen about the message.
I guess, you know, it's also a one way of gratitude.
Gratitude, yes.
Another way is that how do we remain connected?
Connected.
And then you start seeing the purpose of life.
Yes.
Because now Bhagwan has, by his grace, we all are, you know, kind of doing well. We have seen the life. And you suddenly now understand what he gave us was such an undercurrent, important element of a purposeful, satisfying life.
Yes.
Which you do not find even when you get great success in your materialistic yes. pursuit. So I guess it's a kind of a maturation, you can call it.
Yes.
Or you can call it growing old. But I feel we are all coming back to his yes. words and his, you know, days.
And I'm sure you found just one person who is doing this, and I'm sure there'll be so many more the world in different countries who are exactly trying to do this. Trying
there are some
to go
people who are even
deeper.
Offering that, saying if anybody wants to do research on it, we'll support it. Because yeah. this is something a huge mankind needs it.
Yes.
I think this is the first document which Bhagwan himself has penned down.
Right.
Yes.
So imagine the importance of this Vahinis.
Absolutely.
So we need, it's our duty, if whatever way we can bring it back to our mankind and allow it for people to keep it, preserve it, I think that will be our little offering in this process.
Yes. I think for in the years to come, you will find different people sharing their own thoughts, their own commentaries, just like, you know, you have the Bhagavad Gita and you have different people have written commentaries on it.
Correct.
So perhaps, you know, you will find in the years to come, there is the same Prema Vahini, but, you know, somebody can take Prema Vahini and juxtapose it with Ramayana and come in different interpretation of Ramayana. Somebody can take the Prema Vahini, juxtapose it with Mahabharata and get lessons out of that. I mean, I think because these are all eternal texts anyway.
This can be another addition to the Vedanta.
Absolutely.
You know, people said Bhagavad Gita was the yes. end, but Swami yes. gave another Gita,
yes.
Sai Baba Gita, and he has given this. So this is all part of the Vedantic texts, in fact.
Wonderful.
Very true. I mean, if you see how Swami is starting this chapter 3, he says, there have been many great masters who have attained a high level of great power, revealing the great power that's latent in the human body. And this is a very, very potent statement, because Swami often says the proper study of mankind is man.
Yes.
And that is something which also points to the human body, because somebody who is able to understand the mystery and the marvel of the human body itself is like the pinnacle of God's creation.
Yes.
So he says there have been so many masters and people who have demonstrated the great power that is latent in the human body. But why everybody is not able to do that? He says, because the mind is so wavery and it is so busy criticizing others. He says it's so busy criticizing others and doing such small businesses. So he says, when you're always busy finding faults in others, how can you attain one-pointedness? How can you get ekagrata? So if you just rewind a little bit, I think in the previous chapter Swami said that for achieving anything that we want to achieve, one-pointedness or concentration is very important. Ekagrata is very important. And so he's saying here that if you are seeing faults in others, how can you get this ekagrata?
Yes. Wonderful. In fact, two, three thoughts come to my mind. One is, you know, when Swami is saying about the power latent in the human body.
Right.
I was just reminded of Mr. Vade Gaonkar.
Okay.
I don't know if all listeners are aware of Mr. Vade Gaonkar. He's a great servitor of Bhagwan who has been coming to the divine lotus feet right from the 60s. And for every major occasion, you know, festival in Prashantinilayam with the Second World Conference onwards, he's the one who'd come with a team of volunteers and look after the sanitation arrangements in the ashram. Even for the last major birthday of Bhagwan in 2010, he had come with a group of volunteers, and in just 13 days, they erected 125 bathrooms and toilets outside the ashram, another 100 inside the ashram, and then they maintained this for the entire duration of this 2-3 weeks. And he says the greatest miracle of Bhagwan during Bhagwan's 85th birthday is 10,000 people used this. But there was no incident of any disease or dysfunction of this entire system. But the reason I'm sharing this, his life is, when I asked him, you know, how were you able to do this? You know, because he was past, I think perhaps he was nearing 80. He said, I am myself a miracle of Bhagwan. He said, you know what, for the last 40 years, I have this friend who is always with me. It's my prolapsed disc. It's my best friend.
Wow.
And then he says, see, Bhagwan's grace, he has also gifted me with rheumatoid arthritis.
She has gifted him.
And then he says, and then the other blessing that Bhagwan gave me is last few years, my knee joints are giving away. And not only that, the new blessing that Swami has given me is, now I cannot hear properly. See, with all these blessings of Bhagwan, I am still doing his work. What else do you want?
That is the greatest miracle.
The reason I remember this is, you know, when Swami says the power latent in the human body, it is what is encased in the human body.
Right.
When the spirit is high, when you want to just serve the Lord, when the focus on the Lord is so clear.
And you don't even see that.
Yeah, then the body, I think, he has no complaints about the body. He says, body is not mine. Body is, the first time when I saw Swami, I told Swami, this body is yours. I have dedicated this body to you.
Amazing.
Amazing.
Wow.
So this body is, yeah, mera botheration nahi hai. It's not my botheration. So whatever happens, it happens. I have to just, till my last breath, I have to do his work. I have to serve. That is what is the body is for.
How amazing. How amazing. But another point which, you know, comes to my mind is, Swami is talking about ekagrata or one-pointedness here. And he says, you cannot have this ekagrata because you are busy seeing faults in others. But in the previous chapter he says, you cannot get ekagrata when you have the tendency to harm others, when you have that fear.
Yes.
So he gave the example of animals. And he says how, because a lion has the tendency to harm and to kill, so the lion cannot have one-pointedness. So that was the first reason, because it is always having fear.
Yes.
That's why he walks behind looking.
Yeah, and he says it just keeps looking this side, that side. So it cannot have concentration, it cannot have ekagrata, because it has to kill for its food. So that is the first level of physical harm. So here when you are talking about criticizing, it is at a mental level, you're physically not going and slapping a person. So he says, at the physical level, when you are actually criticizing others, you know, you are harming others like an animal, you cannot have ekagrata. So here now he has stepped it up, and he says, even if you are criticizing others at, you know, at the level of the word, so at the level of the senses basically.
Yes.
So that was at the level of the body, now this is at the level of the senses.
Yes.
Even if you criticize others at the level of senses, sorry, ekagrata doesn't come to you.
Yes.
That's what it is.
Yeah, I've been listening to these great masters. I was recalling a story about Swami Rama. And he's been a contemporary saint.
Right.
The Himalayan Institute. We all know about Shirdi Baba's, like he could remove his limbs.
Right.
And take out his intestine, wash them and put them back. See, even today when I tell this story to my corporate people also in the, when in youth, they look at me like as if I'm talking to them fairy tales, you know.
Yeah.
How could somebody just take out his things, you know. So because the concept even is hard to digest in the present day context. Swami Rama, it's a long time back story that he came to US once, and first time when he visited, he had a conference with scientists.
Okay.
And there to justify and just to show them the Himalayan achievements of the masters, he paralyzed half of his body.
Oh.
In front of them. And then he recovered it.
Mm.
So the scientists were very amazed. They had put all that, you know, tube and wiring there. So they were amazed that how could anybody just do that? And he was teaching, showing them the power of mind, that if I have a concentration, look how I can paralyze and fix it. And this was done. It seems after 6-7 years, Swami Rama was again traveling, and these scientists invited him. This time they invited him to show.
Mm-hmm.
And they had developed what we know today as a biofeedback system.
Mm-hmm.
And they had developed a mechanism by which anybody, they can wire them up. And now they showed him that, Swami Rama, look, now we have achieved this through scientific research. Now we can paralyze our body and fix it back.
Mm-hmm.
And they showed it to Swami Rama. Swami Rama laughed. He said, then what is the difference? Swami Rama very laughingly said, I have spent my life in pursuit of the divine, and out of which I just glimpsed, I shared with you. You have wasted your 7 years in paralyzing yourself and fixing it back. So, you know, the perspective of a saint is very different.
Right. Mm.
So they show you that these powers are not important,
but
they are just part of expression of their being, because they have that sense control and the focus. But same thing, if you look at from a materialistic perspective, it becomes a huge different attitude altogether.
Absolutely.
You know? So you are just recalling that masters, how they depict that their powers, and then they'll smile on it, you know.
Just like the other anecdote about the I don't know if it is Ramakrishna Paramahansa or another saint, where one of the disciples learned, you know, after years of penance to walk on the water, and the master said, all it needs is 5 rupees, you give a boatman, will carry you. You spend 10 years trying to master how to walk on water.
That, I think Ramakrishna's story was there.
Yeah.
That he said, why should I waste my that immense energy if I can just do it with two? Like Swami used to say, no, why... Yeah. Ask coffee powder from the
Kalpavriksha. So then, going on to the next paragraph, what he says is, there have been many brave ones and many valorous ones who have, you know, kind of attained an exalted status. Basically, they have controlled their body. They have gone beyond the control of the body. They have been able to control their body. And he says, why am I not doing it?
Yes.
Instead of wasting my time trying to find faults with others, I should search for faults within myself. And I should keep my mind under control. He says, these two are the first step to your spiritual sadhana.
Yes.
So,
Before we go on, just one more thought on that first paragraph.
Right.
Because, you know, when I was reading this Bhagwan's writing, this thought occurred that Swami is saying businesses, vyaparam.
Yes.
See, there, see, mind of man is often wasted wandering on things outside, criticizing others, and similar other activities Swami could have said.
Mm.
But I was thinking, why did Swami use, you know, vyaparam?
Mm.
Because I think the mind is always in business, in this mind of doing a business. Mm-hmm. The mind is always, what will I get, you know? The mind is always in that of a vyapara mode, that business mode, what's in it for me?
Mm.
I feel there is something interesting about Bhagwan using the word vyaparam there.
Yeah, business is always trying to get a...
Trying to get, you know, always thinking, what's the deal? You know, what's in it for me? What's the... what am I going to get out of this deal? And mind is always like that, isn't it?
Right.
See, I recall when Swami started MBA.
Mm.
And that is where he gave the dictum of man.
Yes.
A manager.
Yes.
And he explained that the M stands for
mind of man.
And he has explained it very beautifully.
Yes.
And there actually he gave a differentiation, what is mind of man and what is mind of animal.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm just, when you're talking, I'm recalling, these are the attributes he mentioned, that if you say you are human being, then you have a mind of a man. Then a mind of a man should be focused, should be giving.
Yes.
But if you start expecting, taking, exchanging, criticizing, then you are not using mind of man.
Man.
You are using mind of an animal. So that's how he explained the concept of mind of man.
Yes.
So now, when since you're talking, I just hit me that, I mean, that probably that is what he was trying to say,
yes,
that mind of man means one who gives.
Yes.
And not have anything in a barter system, you know.
Yes.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah.
That education also, he made it like that. Education,
yes,
should not be barter.
Yeah.
Health should not be barter.
Hmm.
So mind of man means one who knows how to give,
yes,
serve.
Yes.
And the moment you make it into a barter,
yes,
then you're not being mind of man.
Yes.
Then I think what you're saying,
yes,
it becomes vyaparam, business.
And that's what, if you're a human being, then you should have that hridaya, as Bhagwan says, and hridaya is compassion.
Compassion.
So, anyway, I'm sorry, Sai Prakash, for going back to the first paragraph.
No, that's wonderful.
But somehow that was just something which stayed in my mind. I thought I'll share it.
That's, yeah, true. And then, so, you know, summarizing the second paragraph again, he said that there have been many brave ones. In fact, again, using the word, he says, Veera Purushulu.
Hmm.
Veera Purushulu is the brave ones.
Yes.
And, you know, it's very interesting because the word bravery, the, you know, fearlessness is such an important,
yes,
aspect of a spiritual journey. And why does somebody need to be brave in order to take the first step for sadhana?
I mean, yeah,
to take the first step of your spiritual sadhana, you need to be brave.
Yeah.
And he said, kashchit dhiraha. In,
yes,
the Vedas also it said,
yes,
some one rare brave soul amongst millions will take this step of taking the first step on a spiritual,
yes,
journey. And why is it that when Swami says, why fear when I am here? Why is it so important?
Mm.
Why is fear such an important factor of, you know, something which we have to overcome?
Mm.
See, these are all thoughts that come up.
I think if you see Bhagwan's gradation, the path for self-realization, it starts with self-confidence. So Swami is very clear that, hello, you got to be confident.
Right.
You know, you got to have that self-confidence. Divine grace will come, but it won't come unless you take that effort. You are confident about the power that is latent in you, and you know.
What I find interesting here is that the destination itself becomes the starting point.
Exactly.
So when we say that self-confidence, and that is actually ultimate conviction that I am one, and there is no difference.
Hmm.
So once you have that oneness, that you know, non-duality, then really you are fearless. Because,
right,
there's nobody else.
Yes.
So if I have nobody else, then who would I fear from? And that concept is, again, starting from self-confidence.
Hmm.
So if you look at it, he expects us to self-realize before we can start living.
Exactly.
So it's not that you have to live at the end, you find self-realization. So you have to be self-realized to start the journey. So it is very funny when the whole world is looking for self-realization at the end of the life.
Yes.
Our Lord says, no child, you better self-realize, then you start the journey.
Exactly.
Then you'll know how to live your life.
Yes.
The path itself is the goal.
The goal.
Path.
Isn't
the path
it funny?
Itself.
It is so beautiful, catch 22.
Yeah.
You can never say, Swami, how do I start?
No, I think that's why you can't go and tell Swami, I have to reach God. Swami, you are God.
You're
what
God.
Do you have to reach? You are already God.
I recall discussing with somebody recently, and he said that, you know, Swami, in a very student gathering, he said, children, today when majority of the human population is in dualism, they're,
mm-hmm,
still gripping with dualism, they're still trying to fathom their separations and all that. By virtue of being with me, I have lifted you to qualified non-dualism.
Oh.
Vashishta Advaita.
Mm-hmm.
Now it is your turn. Just have the faith and the conviction, and you will skip and go into the Advaita.
Oh.
Oneness with the God.
Wonderful.
So we, yeah, are so fortunate, all the devotees of Bhagwan who have been blessed by him, that he has, by default, you know, like, just because you are my child, you are qualified to come. So we have been promoted to Advaita, Vishishta Advaita.
Maybe you should explain this little bit, brother. How all the devotees are now actually have the benefit of being in the stage of Vishishta Advaita.
See, if I look at it very simply, Sai devotees by default have the strong faith that Baba is with us. When he was physically available, you can talk to any devotee from any corner of the world and they will talk to you as if they own Sai Baba. You know, Swami is part of their family.
Yes.
That conviction which he gave to each one of his devotee, isn't that not a part of a glimpse that's showing you that he's one with you?
Yes.
So that the feeling that Sai is mine is almost reaching a stage that Sai and I are one. I don't say my mother is mine. Do you say my mummy is mine?
Yes.
We presume mummy is mine means mummy is mine. There's nothing to say. Yes. She's my mother. That statement itself qualifies that mother is mine. So imagine saying God is mine doesn't qualify for us when we say Baba is. So we have reached that stage where every devotee or anybody who has been blessed in that manner, we started saying and believing that he is part of our family.
Yes. Absolutely.
So by default, we have been jumped into a position wherein we don't find separation.
Yes. From I am servant of the Lord to I am the son of the Lord. I am part of the Lord's family.
Swami is part of my family.
Yes.
Everybody goes to their room and thinking Swami is mine. And he also behaves as if he was there with you, like, you know.
Yes.
So we all are by default reach that stage wherein we don't feel separation from the Lord.
Yes.
Now it is that dichotomy that am I one with the Lord? That is a jump.
Yes.
That jump is required. But we all constantly live with that awareness that He is God, I am His devotee or His servant or His child. So there is a duality.
Yes.
But He is mine.
Yes.
That also is there.
Yes.
I am His.
Yes.
That also. So we have gone to Vishishta Advaita by default.
Yes.
We have not done any
special
effort.
Unconsciously, Swami has just lifted us.
Lifted us.
Yes.
Each one, you can talk to even present devotees, anybody, they will say, Baba is mine.
You know, it goes to the extent of saying somebody from Bengal, for example, may say, Swami loves sweet.
Yeah.
Somebody from Andhra says, Swami loves spicy food.
He loves spicy.
Yeah. So
because Swami has behaved like that with each one of them.
Exactly.
Everybody. So the concept of that duality was, He is God. That much is sure. We all say, He is like master. But He is my master.
Yes.
I recall Shiva Puran from there, you know, when I look at Mother Parvati's life, and that has been a great inspiration for me. Because when you look at her, she is married to Lord.
Yes.
Okay? So she is almost, she is Ardhangini. She is the half. She is herself the energy.
Yes.
But she spends, according to the Purans, I have not been there, so I can't. According to the Purans, she spends most of the day praying to Shivling.
Yes.
Because she says, as a wife, I can sit next to you. But as a devotee, I need to connect with you to remain worthy of sitting next to you.
Hmm.
So the mother, the energy, also needs to keep working.
Hmm. Yes.
And that is the only way to enjoy Lord. If you become one with the master, then there is nothing like loving or caring.
Yes.
The whole creation is so beautiful because it is the only expression of showing expression of love.
Yes,
absolutely. And I don't think Swami, anybody can better explain than Swami's statement. I separated myself from myself to love myself.
Yes.
So even the creation, the concept of creation was love.
Yes.
So when you see the mother and master, the separation itself is to romance, to love.
Yes.
And how does she romance? With Shivling, the worshipping of the Lord. And when she comes to the concert, she is one with the master. She can take decisions like master.
Yes.
But when she separate from him, then she is serving him.
Yes.
See,
wonderful.
I learned that, I love that affection. And that's what I see Swami has done to all of us.
Vishishta Advaita to Advaita. She's reached there.
She's reached there. Yes. Now we are still hanging from Dvaita to Vishishta. No problem.
Yes.
But at least Swami has given us by default.
Yes.
When we are separate from him.
Yes.
We are worshipping him. We call on him. We love him. We admire him.
Yes.
But there are occasions in our day, every day I'm sure all of us feel that. When we feel he's not different and we talk to him, we fight with him, we smile at him, we do everything with him.
Yes.
And that time he's not different from me. Yes. So we have reached that.
Yes.
But I don't think we have done anything special to achieve. That's why I can say very safely that yes, it is a blessing.
Yes.
That the master has given to each and every devotee of his.
You know, one more, just an episode comes to my mind. There was a spiritual master when I met him. So he was mentioning about the devotion of Radha to Lord Krishna. And he says that, you know, Radha had a lot of suffering in her life. Lot of pain, lot of, like people, she went through a lot of suffering. To what extent she understood it as suffering is different, because Swami always asked that question.
Yeah.
But she was put into lot of pain and suffering. He asked, do you know why? Of course, we didn't know. And he said, in her entire life, once she got a doubt whether Krishna is with me or not.
Oh my God.
Once, oh for God. Once she had a doubt. I mean, she didn't even say, oh, Krishna is not with me. She got, is Krishna really with me or not? Oh. And that is the level of, that is the biggest sin she has committed in her entire life.
Oh God.
And I mean, from this level of, from this level
it's
of,
high, it is very depressing now.
but at the same time, it just shows how much concession Swami has given in the Kali Yuga.
Absolutely.
Humongous. Otherwise, you would not be qualified to sit there.
Yeah.
But that is true, actually, you know, if you look at it. Like I remember,
that's why I think all the sages and saints, you know, they envy people in Kali Yuga. It's so easy, man, for you. How much we had to toil to get even this
See,
much
See, he says, instead of searching faults in others, search for faults within yourself.
Yes.
So, as you rightly said, the first step is the last step. Last step is the first step. How can we not find with faults with others? Only when we realize that others are ourselves and we are others. Correct. Unless we see that unity, that feeling of unity, you are still going to find faults with others.
In fact, one day in our small get-together with Swami, he mentioned, he said, as long as you can see fault in others, you have that fault.
Exactly. Yeah.
So he was just killed us right there, because nobody would complain now. Because if you complain, then say you have that same thing, so why are you complaining? So he said, same, it's like so clean, eh?
Yes. Reflection, reaction, reaction. And then he would say that when you point a finger, three fingers are pointing back at you. So how many times?
Amazing. Wow, so this is the firm resolve that anyone has to take if you have to start on the spiritual path. So let's move on to the next paragraph.
మనము దినమంతయు పనులు చేయుచునే ఉందము. ఇట్లు దినమంతయు పడు పాటలలో ఉద్దేశమేమి? ఈ అట్టహాసము, ఈ ఉరుకులు, పరుగులు అన్నీ మన చరమదశ మధురంగా ఉండవలననియే కదా. పగటి యొక్క తుది ఘడియ సాయంకాలము వచ్చును. పగటి పనులన్నీ పవిత్ర భావములతో జరిగిన రాత్రి ప్రార్థన మధురంగా జరుగును. అట్టి సంతృప్త భావము ఏర్పడగానే ఏకాగ్రత పొందుదుము.
We are unceasingly engaged in various activities throughout the day. What is the purpose of this daily toil? Isn't all this work, fun, show and strain meant to ensure that our final moments are sweet and pleasant? The day culminates with the evening. If the day's work is accomplished with a sacred feeling, then the night's prayer would go on sweetly. Once we experience such a feeling of fulfillment, we can attain one-pointed concentration. You just heard part one of our program, Vahini Satsang. This episode was first aired on the second day of February 2017 as part of Thursday Live from Prashanthi Nilayam on Asia Stream of Radio Sai Global Harmony. We hope you enjoyed it. Your feedback is very important to us. Please email your thoughts to listener@radiosai.org. You can catch the next part of this right here, same time, same place, next week. This program was hosted by Team Radio Sai's Bishu. Thank you and Sai Ram.